Blog Talk Radio.
Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, and as always, I'm joined by my sister, Denise. We're excited about tonight's show. We have our girl, Sean Richards, on the phone. How are you, Sean?
I'm all right, my darlings. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. Just trying to beat the heat here in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's pretty hot over here in La La Land, too, I've got to say.
I just want to remind everyone that's tuning in tonight that the call-in number, if you have a question or comment, it's 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. Wanted to remind everybody that coming up very soon is IMATS London. I think that's July 10th and 11th. They got a lot going on, as always. One of the things that drew my attention was a master class in digital makeup design featuring Rod Maxwell. And then our lovely guest has something going on. You want to tell us about it, Sean?
Well, you know, I'm just doing, I'm doing transforming color because more and more people, I mean, it started from when I did the white makeup on Cloud Atlas and you know, turned Halle Berry white for one of her roles. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, and it's something that I wanted to share. And then with Bessie, it was exactly the same thing, turning Queenie darker. So I'm doing a masterclass on stage at IMATS called Transforming Color, and it's to show people how to do it whilst keeping the skin alive, you know, so that it doesn't look dry, light passes through it, it works, you know, all the VFX boys are happy because it looks real. So that's what we're going to be doing, and I hope everybody in the whole universe comes and visits it.
Oh, that's going to be a lovely class to see.
Yeah, it's a good one. It, you know, it's a really nice one because I don't think people realize how simple it is. It's literally, it's understanding color theory and it's understanding tonal theory, which is something I'm now endorsing. When I train people and do masterclasses. So once you've got the fundamentals down, you can pretty much do anything, and that's what I want to show them.
Right.
Gotcha.
Well, let's start the conversation off tonight. I mean, I know you've been on the show before, but can you just briefly introduce yourself to our audience again for those who may not have heard the first show?
Yeah, sure, of course. Hi, everyone. I'm Sean. I'm a makeup artist. I've been doing it an awfully long time now, 28 years, second generation. My dad was a movie makeup artist, and I've grown up in the business pretty much. Department headed my first feature film at 28, blagged my way into that. Don't quite know how it happened, but it did. And ever since then, I have been working in movies. I've also done editorial and runway and special effects and pretty much anything and everything that I think that I should be able to do. I do believe that a good artist should be diverse, so my ability is very diverse, so it stretches from special effects to high-end fashion, and it's done me okay because I've actually managed to have a career out of it and even buy a house and pay a mortgage, so I'm not doing badly if I can do that in my book. I
That's right.
You know, as long as I can put food on the table, keep the kids in one piece, I think I'm doing okay.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're managing.
Yeah, we're getting there. Getting there, babe.
You know, of all the diverse work that you've done, would you say film was your first love or the thing that you're most passionate about?
God, you know, probably if you'd asked me that question about 10 years ago, I would say undoubtedly it is. And I do love making movies. I've got to say, I absolutely get a thrill. There is a huge joy in my heart when I do it. But to be honest, my love isn't really a genre. It's in makeup. I love makeup. So if I go and I do a still shoot and I'm doing someone, I just get such a kick out of that. You know, it's just as good. If I'm doing an editorial shoot, it's creative on a completely different level. It demands different disciplines, and I love that too. You know, with London Brush Company, my brand, I'm getting the opportunity now to actually utilize my knowledge and help the public. And that in itself is one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done. And I think it's great to give back, but it's also wonderful to be able to impart all of the experiences that I've had and help someone that maybe has got no idea what she's doing. She's feeling really insecure about herself. And then after she spends an hour with me, the tables are turned and she's walking taller and texting me back a few days later to sort of say, oh my God, I'm getting compliments left, right and center. So for me, there are so many different avenues and they all lead to one gorgeous thing, and that is makeup. So my love affair is actually with the medium and not which way it manifests itself.
Right. Nice. So today's topic is the movie Bessie and the makeup that you did for Queen Latifah on that movie. How did your relationship with Queen Latifah begin?
Well, really, that one came right out of the blue. I've got to say, I mean, girls, you both know me. I'm nobody's personal, but I've done personal many times for people. So I've always just gone on and sort of done it on a project by project basis. And the reason that I ended up doing this movie was that HBO actually contacted my agent, and they apparently had asked about my work on Cloud Atlas. They'd spoken to Halle Berry about it. They told me, she said, they should definitely get in touch with me. And so they contacted my agent and I had a meeting. And I actually thought it was for a department head. I had no idea it was to be her personal. You know, I went into this meeting going, yeah, well, you know, there's this great storyline and this and that, and I can do this and that and the other. And then they said, yeah, but actually, well, we really aren't interested in that. We want you to do Queen Latifah's personal makeup. And I went, oh, well, that's different. Well, thank you very much,
right,
first of all. So it sort of went down like that. It was a very pleasant surprise. Something I never expect anything to happen from anything. I've never done a job thinking, well, that's going to get me the next big piece of cake or whatever, because to be honest, I don't take anything for granted in our industry. It can turn on a dime, and it often does. You know, one minute you have a job, the next minute the job's gone away for whatever reason, you know, and you girls both know it. You're in there. So it was really, really lovely to get that sort of feedback that, yes, the work on Cloud Atlas was really well recognized and received within the industry as well as the public. And then as a result of that, I got a phone call, which was just unbelievable. So basically, that's how it went down, girls.
So you get the job, and then what? Did you start to prepare? And if so, how did you start your preparation?
Well, first of all, I mean, when I found out I'd got it, I read up on Bessie, looked for every single piece of source material, visual source material that I could, wanted to hear her voice a bit, so went online, found some old recordings that I could listen to with a bit of snap, crackle and pop in them, just to try and get the sound of the earthiness. You know, I wanted to kind of hear who she was so that I could feel where I would go, because obviously with someone like Queen, she's so well recognized, and she's such a formidable woman. I mean, it was perfect casting, in my opinion. I don't know that anyone could have done what Queen did. I think she was flawless in her performance. But the way I prepared for it was that you can't really stop Queen Latifah from looking like Queen Latifah unless you're going to do prosthetics.
Right.
So for me, the challenge was very similar to the stuff with Halle, actually, when I made her white. It was, well, what nuances do I put into her makeup? Because I can't put prosthetics on her face because it isn't one of those shows and it's not really needed. How do I change what we've got there to try and adapt and get her to look like Bessie? And obviously the first thing was her skin tone, because Queen is much lighter than Bessie was.
Right.
And just things like, you know, brow shapes and lip shapes and, you know, highlight and shade, corrective makeup around her face and neck, you know, just to see, well, where can I take this person to get her to be as close to Bessie Smith? So that was sort of my initial thing. And then, you know, when I met her, it was more of a, well, we're going to do makeup tests. She's going to be my inspiration, because I didn't want to get tainted by anybody else's sound or interpretation of Bessie Smith. I was only interested in Queen Latifah's interpretation and, of course, in Dee Reese, our director's interpretation. They're the only opinions that really registered. And, of course, you know, HBO factor in, because they're always going to look at your work and go, well, you know, we'd like this, or it's perfect, or whatever, you know. So the final say always does come from HBO. But when we're developing something, it's me and Queen and, you know, what we've got going on with Dee as well.
Right. So what kind of input did she have? What was she thinking about as far as the look was concerned?
You know, God bless her. I have to say, she was like, well, you're the professional. I'm going to pretty much leave it up to you. You know, she didn't want to wear a lot of makeup. I didn't want her wearing a lot of makeup. I wanted it to be a secondary thing to her performance. And anyway, Bessie was a very, very raw-faced, you know, southern woman, for goodness sake. They weren't putting on a ton of stuff back then. But, you know, Queen wanted it to be natural, but she wanted to look good. She's like, you know, I do want to look good. I don't want to look so much like it's such a big struggle. And I said, yeah, I understand. We tweak it for the show. You know, it's smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are actually doing entertainment. We're not doing a History Channel biopic. We're doing a story, you know.
Exactly.
And I think that sometimes people forget that. You know, they comment or they'll say, well, he didn't really look like that person, or she didn't really look like that person. Well, yes, okay, fair enough. Aside from that, did you enjoy the movie? Did you think, did you buy into the whole story? Did you absorb the character? Did it work? If you did all that, then we succeeded, because we are telling a story. It's not a documentary. So, you know, definitely we wanted to keep her looking great. HBO definitely wanted her to look as great as we could, with, of course, allowances for those parts in the story. Dee was brilliant. She wanted it very... I think the only request, actually, God bless her, that Dee Reese ever really made for me was that she wanted a pussy booger scar. I quote you that. Sean, I want a pussy booger scar on her forehead for the scene where Ma Rainey is taking off whatever it was off her head, you know, which was the cuts that she gets in the very first scene, and what gave Bessie her scar. But like I said, God bless Dee Reese, because that was my one directive. I want a pussy booger scar, Sean. I'm like, you're going to get the pussiest one I can give you, babe. I promise.
So, well, Sean, let me ask you this really quickly. Did you ever see the HBO movie Boycott?
I have not.
That had Jeffrey Wright. Do you know who Jeffrey Wright is? Actor Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
He played Martin Luther King, and based on what we all know about Martin Luther King, he was nobody's light-skinned, right?
Right.
Well, Jeffrey Wright played Martin Luther King, and it goes back to what you were just saying. Nobody even thought about the comparisons between the two as far as their looks or anything. You watched that movie, and you believed he was Martin Luther King while you were watching the movie, and you just got so caught up.
I'm looking at a picture of him right now. I'm seeing it because I thought, well, let me know what I'm talking about here. Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, from the picture I'm seeing of him next to MLK, the color or the way they've lit it, I mean, he's a different tone, but they'd got him probably a little bit darker than MLK, actually. But it doesn't matter, does it? Because, you know, he's playing a character, and it's a role.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise, we would do a life cast of their face. We would sculpt an exact replica of MLK or Bessie or whoever, and we would stick prosthetics on, and we would change them to look perfect, you know, and that is totally doable. But that's not drama.
Right.
And drama
Absolutely.
Depicts itself. You know, drama is drama. It's a story.
And kind of the same issue, and I don't think the movie hasn't come out yet, but Zoe Saldana playing
Nina,
thank you. And everyone made such a big deal when they saw some photos of her, and they're like, well, how? Because I believe it was Mary J. Blige who they said was going to play her at first. And then, you know, everything changed. And everybody was making a big deal about her. Well, she's so much lighter. How can they? And did you see the makeup? And people were talking about it. And so I went out and I looked at the pictures. And I'm like, okay, yes, she's, of course, much lighter. And they may have darkened her up a little. But when I look at the actual pictures, I thought it was great. I don't know if know if you saw them. What did you think about it? I thought it was great. I thought, you know, let's just forget how light someone was, how dark someone was. You're not going to be their complexion if you're just not their complexion. But
you can. But that's the only bit. That's the only place. But I do disagree with. I think that you should try and get as close as you can, because otherwise, then we'll cast a white man to play MLK. We'll cast Kate Moss to play Nina Simone. You know, they cast someone who's close so that we can get them there. And you know, Zoe was a lot lighter than Nina, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, very.
I mean, I'm looking at pictures right now, and you know, it's, and also it's a very different frame of person, whereas Queenie has Bessie's build, and so does Jeffrey. Jeffrey has got very similar, in some respects, physiognomy to MLK. You know, look at Daniel Day-Lewis. Look how brilliant he turned out as Lincoln because of Lois Burwell and Kenny Myers' exquisite paint job that they did on him. But the bone structure was already there, but they still gave him the nuances that he needed to take him to Lincoln. It's called character work.
Right.
So we still need to do character work. We should be, if someone is lighter than the person they're playing, absolutely we should make them match. So I would never want to knock anyone else's work because we never know what the constraints of each job are. But just looking at Nina, you know, Nina Simone, God bless her, such an icon. It's a very difficult role to do. So I think that whatever it is, we got to get them as close as they can do, as we can rather, so that they can do their role as best as they can. And that was the thing that happened with Queenie, because as I said, she owned it. I remember the day where we'd done two makeup tests and, you know, I actually made her darker, much darker. I wanted to go that really beautiful sort of Abyssinian bluish dark brown espresso with those rich plum tones coming through and purple tones in the skin and, you know, those lovely deep olives that you, when you see really beautiful black skin, it's such a picture. And I really thought that Queen Latifah, if anyone could carry that off, that woman can, because in my book, I mean, she is just a mensch. She is such a team player. She's so awesome. She's so game on point. And I'm actually smacking the seat I'm sitting on as I'm saying it, because she is, and she reinforces that in her professionalism. So, you know, one of the makeups I did were actually too dark for HBO. They said, we've got to light the whole thing. It would have thrown the lighting off so much so that it would have been very challenging for them to balance the lighting properly with everyone else, because Bessie was darker than most of her contemporaries. And so that's how I did it on the first run, shall we say. And I thought she looked amazing. But I totally understood where they were coming from. And this is why we do makeup tests. You know, we need to know what the DP is going to do. We need to know how they're going to shoot it. What filters are they going to do? How are they going to grade it? So the next test, I made her lighter, but I ended up doing 4 to 5 shades darker all over. I would have never left her lighter than Bessie in the way that, you know, I can see that the Nina makeup, you know, the body makeup maybe isn't quite up to the same match as the facial makeup. Now, who knows why? Maybe the pictures that are on the internet, she's leaving, you know, the costume and she needs to be touched up for camera. You never hear that side of
right.
the story, but they'll publish those pictures and they mess with makeup and they mess with people in production. It's very unfair. So, you know, I do think, though, that we should always do character makeup. That is the bottom line of that big monologue. Always do character makeup.
That monologue. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because if we don't pay attention to detail, then work becomes mediocre. And what we must remember is that the viewing audience is much more intelligent and savoir-faire than ever before. They know exactly what's going on. They'll look for mistakes in work and they'll comment on it. And the minute we get lazy and complacent and we don't do what we should do as real artists, that's when we're letting down not only ourselves but the industry. Because sloppy work will make sloppy viewers and then their expectations come down. And instead of people always expecting the best, they'll expect third best, not even second best. So, no, we've got to always maintain that level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So speaking of the critics and people that go see the movies and you know, how they are very critical, first let me ask, did you see the movie?
I did.
And what did you think about makeup and more importantly, like your makeup job when you saw the movie?
Oh, I'm horrible when I see my work on camera.
I know.
I'm horrible. I've got to tell you that when it aired, I think it was the 16th of May. Yeah, it aired, and I purposely made myself out of the house, but I recorded it. And I know it's pathetic, isn't it? I'm so pathetic.
But it's what we do, though. It's just what
we do. Oh, my God. So I recorded it. And then I had not had a chance to see dailies once whilst we were filming because we were so flat out. I hadn't seen any of the grading going on in post. And, you know, I'd said, if you want me around so that I can be there to make sure the skin tone is bang on, let me know, because, you know, I love working with the VFX boys and the DP when they're in post, if it's needed, so that they get it from the makeup artist's point of view, not some completely untrained eye looking at it. But they didn't need that either. And I thought, oh, crap, well, this could either be great. And I have to say, but all through filming as well, HBO was so complimentary to my work. You know, I was getting memos and just like, oh, my God, this is the shit. We're in love with this. We're in love with this. So I know that they were happy, but it still comes down to me, for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't watch the show. And when I played it, I played the first 20 minutes, and then I switched it off because I couldn't bear to look because I was like, oh, my God, that's the work. Oh, my God. So I switched it off, totally switched it off, thought about it, and thought, oh, my God, okay, well, that just about passed. Let me look at it. And I couldn't bring myself to look at it until 2 days later. I mean, you know, everyone thinks I'm this big, tough broad. I am an artist and very vulnerable in the same way as everyone else is. And, you know, it's very difficult for me to look at my... Anyway, so 2 days later, I'm like, right, Sean, you're pathetic. Sit down, watch this, and see if you would pass yourself, you know? And I got to tell you, I started looking at it, and I actually did forget about the makeup, which was really, really nice. I could focus just on her performance. And I cried. And I think it's such a... And I cried when I saw Cloud Atlas as well. I wept because it was so much emotion that was put into that work, because I do put so much of myself. I mean, you know me, girls. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm very old school. I'm very passionate about maintaining the high standards in our industry. And so because I wear my heart on my sleeve and I practice what I preach or try to, so when I finally saw that work after all those months sustaining it and wondering, well, how's it come out? I sobbed my heart up. Tears were just running down my face. And, of course, you know, you then start thinking, if only my parents were alive to see this. They would love this. Mm-hmm. This was why they supported me. This was why my mum never told me to get a real job. You know, my dad was my inspiration because of being a makeup. So it's like all of those sorts of elements. And it just goes to show you cannot separate the heart from art. And I hate to be so corny in these sort of one-liners I'm saying, but you can't. You just cannot. It's impossible. I can't look at my work without just getting really emotional, especially when it's a major transformation like that. Because I think secretly we all have little accidents as we're doing it because we're so nervous. Like, oh my God, please make this work. Even if we know we can do it, you know, there's always that element of racking your brain all the time as you're doing something.
Right.
So from my side, it was beautiful. Of course, then when I watched all of the other makeups and hair, Lawrence's hair design was so divine. Lawrence Davis, he's such a talented guy. And Monty Hsu, who, you know, comes from theatre, he's a beautiful wig and hairdresser. You know, the hair looked so nice. It was right. You know, all of the fros were beautifully done. All of the, you know, period hairdressing, the period work was stunning. Miss Debbie Young, God love her, who was department head. You know, her team was so sweet. Me and Noelle and you girls, of course, were there and all sorts of people who came to play. It was exactly what HBO wanted. I think that is the best thing of all, is that we literally gave HBO exactly what they wanted. And, you know, for me, I think the moment that I'll never forget in the entire movie was the first time we really got Queenie in full makeup. All her tattoos were covered and everything was there, and she stood up in the makeup room and she said to myself and Iasia, her hairdresser, she said, right, let me just go and get my costume and then we can see if there's anything else that needs doing. So she went and got costume on, and then she came back in, and Iasia was going to pop her hat on and I was going to just finish any last looks. And she stood and she started to sing, and every last hair on my arm lifted up. And I definitely welled up. And she turned around and she said, you've given me Bessie. I now have my character. Here she is. Finally, I can see her. And now I know where to take her. And it was, she's so generous like that. She is so generous in saying that. Because, you know, we are, I do believe makeup is unsung heroes, quite frankly. Because we are the ones that do that and touch the face and touch the body and take them to the next stage of their character development. And it's so divine when you have a class act like Queen Latifah, or as Meryl Streep did with her wonderful J. Roy Helland when he won the Academy Award with Marc Coulier for Mrs. Thatcher. You know, when she said 30 years he's been doing this and finally he's applauded. The value, they know the value of a good artist, and it's just a class act that says it.
Right. Wow. Wow.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And I haven't seen it, but I keep hearing things, great things about it.
Especially about Latifah's performance.
Yeah.
She was brilliant. She deserves an Emmy, that woman. I tell you, she put her heart and soul into it. She really did. I mean, she worked her butt off.
Yeah. That's what I'm hearing. I hear it's really good.
Yeah, I'd love it if she win. I would have the biggest flag. I'd be flying it. I'd be like, yay, Queenie!
Yeah, I love period pieces. What other period pieces have you worked on?
Oh, my God, all sorts, really. Because, you know, I think a lot of people think that period is just sort of 30s or 40s or whatever. But you know,
right.
I mean, one of the first movies I did, which, you know, as a department, I did A Christmas Carol. It was the animated Christmas Carol. I was department head of the live action bit. So that's all Dickensian. You know, I did Simon Callow. We, you know, made a beard and wig. And eyebrows for him and colored his hair and did character makeup. And then I had background of, God knows, over 300 in full sort of Edwardian makeup and hair. So, you know, we had that going on. That, I think that was one of the very first ones. Period, though. I mean, Apocalypto, for goodness sake, is period. It's just Mayan. It's ancient Mayan.
Right, right.
You know, I did special effects on that movie. Let me think back. You know, God, I've done so many. I can't even remember jobs I've blooming done now. But there are loads. I've done 30s. I've done Charles the First. You know, you name it. Across the board, I've done it. It's like, you know, one of the last movies that we did one of the movies I did in the last few years, rather, is called The Last Night. And, you know, it's Morgan Freeman, who, of course, had his team come in with him, as always, Mike Hancock, who's such a lovely guy, and Clive Owen, and Clive came with his makeup artist, Dorka. But as department head, you know, my thing was to make it look like a cross between Game of Thrones and Sons of Anarchy. So I had all these period elements going into the hair design and stuff like that, because in Europe, and I do makeup and hair design, because that's what I've always done. In the States, I'm a makeup department head because of the union. So you can't do both. But when I'm in Europe, that's how it works. So, you know, we had all sorts of hair pieces and facial pieces and beautiful hair work on the girls and period makeup. And you know, people think that all makeup is very stylized. Well, it really isn't, because what people seem to forget is that even though every decade is another era, but not every person wears full makeup, no matter what their state, you know, no matter what period it is. Just because it's 30s, it doesn't mean that every woman plucked their eyebrows to a hairline and, you know, did that classic 30s makeup. Absolutely not. You know, there are loads of pictures if you just source them. And you can find anything. To be honest, many of the time it's all about the costume and the hair. You know, and then when it's a done-up look, it's about the makeup.
Absolutely. Right. And that's what I always loved about period movies anyway, was the fact that, you know, we would have so many people in the background working, doing the background, that you're going to get kind of a different look anyway, because everybody's hand is different. So
that's right. As it should be. Absolutely. Should not be uniform, because life is not uniform.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I remember one of the first period jobs I did just as a background person was, there was a show in England called Sharp's People. There's a whole series of them, Sharp's Republic, Sharp's Revenge. Sean Bean played the lead in the whole series and all its seasons. And, you know, that, again, it was all, you know, military hairdos and all sorts of things. So there's period stuff everywhere. 80s is period, for heaven's sake. 70s is period. 60s is period. 1997 now is period. You know, it's like, my God, the year my son was born is now period hair and makeup.
Right.
It really is. You know, everyone was having that gull wing eyebrow, or they had the full eyebrow. So they either had the Linda Evangelista brow, or they had the Brooke Shields brow. Or, you know, it was like very androgynous looking as well. Everything was driven by the supermodels back in the 90s. So the 90s looks, and also you had a lot of red lips and black hair. So you had that kind of arty-farty thing going on as well. So, but that's still a period look.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I love, one of the things that I loved about working with the background on Bessie is that with the look, you know, everyone didn't get red lips. And we kind of you know, let the makeup play off of the wardrobe a little bit. You know, if they were the better dressed background artists, you know, they may have gotten a red lip. Some of them.
Right.
Even if, you know what I mean? So we kind of played off of the wardrobe a little bit and just kind of did some random things so that everyone wasn't looking the same.
That's right. And you know, the one thing that a lot of people forget when they're doing period work that is a makeup period work, they actually forget to research. And this is something I was talking about with Donald Mowat. Donald is an amazing makeup artist. He's actually, right now, he's just finishing up James Bond. He's doing Daniel for that. And we were talking about period work because we, you know, he was doing a 50s movie. He said, oh, would you come and do some makeup for me? And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing anything. And the first thing I did was to check out all of the colors that they used in the 50s, the actual tone of the red or the tone of the pink.
Right.
How was it made? How was it made? What were the components? Cochineal, this, that, the other. It means that the shade of red is different maybe between 1950 and 1960. Maybe they didn't use red. Or the red of the 50s would be very different from the red of the 90s, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's about actually doing your homework and finding out what were the ingredients that they had access to back in the day when they were making these cosmetics, because obviously cosmetics have refined and changed over the centuries. So
right.
You need to sort of get down to your raw ingredients thing. And when I'm doing something that is very specific, I actually go that nerdy. You know, I want to try and mix that color myself so that I can see that I get the absolute accurate pigment for the period, not just the color.
Right. And another thing is, you know, a white woman in 1940s, you know, may have had access to, of course, different makeup, whereas a black woman in the 1940s, depending on where she lived, didn't have access to the
completely
same.
Completely different. Yes. You
if
have
any
to
at all.
Do everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're absolutely right. You have to look at every fine detail, you know, and it really is. I mean, makeup is detailed. It is one of the most detailed things we see on camera, to be honest, because when it's a close-up, it's makeup that you're seeing, and that's where all those little nuances come into effect. So, yeah,
right.
You have to do your homework. You have to know what you're doing. And I'm sorry, but that separates the wheat from the chaff. Don't be lazy. Do your work. Know your stuff.
Right.
Be pro.
Right.
And bring it. You
right.
know?
Right. That's right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Absolutely. What's like some of your favorite references when you're doing your research?
Oh my God, I've got to tell you, that's a difficult one for me to answer, because I mean, I'm not your normal garden worm, shall we say. You know, I take inspiration from all sorts of different things. I look to nature. I look to what is, you know, out there and what is working in nature, because I always get my color inspiration from that. I'm looking at, I definitely wanted to listen to what her music was like, because I want to get the feel for it. So, you know, you can sort of feel the sweat through her music or the moonshine coming out of her pores kind of thing, because you know all that was going on, and the rest, because she was a player. So my inspiration really didn't come too much from anything that was photographically visual, other than stuff of people, shall we say. Yeah, of people. Everything else had fair chance. So if it's architecture or fabrics or nature or something to do with, you know, anything like that. And then the music to give me the kind of feeling for it, that's where I would have taken it from. But I took my lead from Queen. I mean, that's the bottom line. I took my lead from Queen. No matter what inspiration I had, if it doesn't work on her, it's not worth 2 cents.
Right.
So I always, you know, and you've got your makeup tests, you've got your mood boards. Iasia and I work closely together. That's her hairdresser. Work very closely together. You know, I was saying what I wanted to do with her. She was like, oh, my God, that sounds brilliant, blah, blah, blah. This is what I want to do. So we did a lot of powwows together. We were very, very tight, Iasia and I, in sort of sorting things out. And she's Queen's hairdresser all the time, so she knows her inside out. And, you know, but it was definitely a work in progress together. And I would definitely say that the final inspiration was the woman herself, Queenie.
Right. Right. And like you said, she kind of made it a little easier for you when she just, you know, when she said, you know, you're the pro, she's just looking for you to do whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that made it easy for you or not. For most people, it would have made it easy.
Yeah, it's much easier when they let you do what you're good at. Yeah, it really
right.
is easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think it's also key, what you were saying, that you and Iasia worked closely together. I think it's
very important to say that, because, you know, with the hair and makeup, and it doesn't have to be a period piece. I mean, just anything when you're working as a personal for somebody, I think it's important to kind of work along with the hair person to try to get the look that you're going for.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. And you know, I mean, we, from day one when we met, you know, I understood where I was listening to what she was saying. I didn't know her from Adam, didn't even know she was Queenie's regular hair person, you know. But mm-hmm. I totally got where she was coming from. And very soon we became a very tight unit. I mean, it's not about makeup. And we had to be a tight unit, because many's the time we were double teaming her. Yeah, mm-hmm. because it's a, you know, for example, if she had full body makeup one day and Aisha's got to wrap her hair and get it under a wig, I mean, you girls know how long all that stuff sort of takes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
For me, you know, doing wigs in England, I know that when you're wrapping a head and it's got to fit tight and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, she and I, we had such a rhythm down. She was so brilliant. You know, she would maybe do three lots of things, and then she'd stop and I'd do something. If I needed to do like anything around the eyes, very delicate, like putting individual lashes or something on, she would stop. We would literally have a rhythm. There was an ebb and a flow to our work mm-hmm. and our collaboration. And I adored her because, you know, it was such an easy way to work. You wouldn't even know that we were double teaming. And it was better for Queen because it meant that she would have been in makeup for about 3 hours in makeup and hair
right.
the entire time if we hadn't done that. And by doing that, we got it down to an hour and a half on a bad day. So,
oh, wow.
you know,
nice.
Yeah. So that was great, you know, and we couldn't have done it if we hadn't both totally respected each other's work and what we needed and just figured it out, you know. We and we're like one person working instead of two. It was a really nice synergy.
That's nice. That's nice to hear. because, you know, it could be, you know, working sometimes could be difficult enough with other things going on, you know, and not having everybody working together. You know, and hair and makeup. So that's really good to hear.
But Bessie was special, wasn't it? You know that Bessie was special. It wasn't like any show we'd done before, really. It was its own, it had its own life force, didn't it? And
mm-hmm.
and I think everybody
yeah.
wanted to do such a great job because they, well, I think also the crew adored Queen. So
exactly.
Yeah, it exactly. was like, let's rock this chick out. Come on, let's really knock it out of the park and let's do a piece of work that we're proud of. And that means something to people because also, you know, there is a monumental presence in the music world. And I hate to call it the black music world, but it is. And mm-hmm. and we've got to, because color really, I nearly swore then. Color really annoys me in this country, the way that people are so short-sighted and see only color rather than a person. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. that is the society that we have to acknowledge. And so in doing so, we had to make sure that we were representing the black music industry in the early days of it to the best mm-hmm. of our ability, to make sure that it was represented properly and honorably and also tastefully, you know, because it was riotous. I mean, Bessie led a very bohemian life. And
right.
that was very prevalent in the day. I mean, the 30s were a raunchy time. Put it that way. All those opium dens and things like that were going along, there was all sorts of naughty business going down. So
right.
we needed to make sure that everything was done in the right way, to the right level, to the right amount, so that it just did the job, but also so that it did entertain, going back to the entertainment versus documentary, because we don't want it to be boring.
Right, absolutely.
But, yeah, and the crew were totally behind that. So that was one of those jobs that it just did click like that. It was a great crew.
That's
yeah.
nice. That's nice. Now,
yes.
talk a little bit about, and I don't know how much interaction you had with Debbie Young, the department head. And I mean, I know Queen was totally on you guys, but how much interaction did you all have with the department heads of hair and makeup as far as the total look of the show? Was there any?
No, that's not what a personal is there for, you know. And
right.
as I department head as well as personal. So I see it from both sides completely. And, you know, whilst we understand, you know, when I'm designing, for example, when I did The Last Nights as department head, I did a massive mood board. You know, I showed Clive's makeup artist and I showed Morgan's makeup artist. I said to Mike, come and have a look. Tell me what you think. He's like, that is awesome. He said, well, you know, Morgan's got some ideas for facial hair. I said, that's absolutely fine. I said, as long as it fits, as long as I said, I just want God happy. So go and make God happy and do a great job. And I'll tell him I'll see him on set. And, you know, as long as they knew what where I was going with it, that was the only conversation I needed to have with Morgan's makeup artist and with Clive's makeup artist. And the same applied for myself and Debbie because, you know, she knows that I know my stuff. She was absolutely magnanimous and wonderful. And she just said, you know, well, this is what I'm doing. This is what HBO have wanted. And that was it. We literally probably spoke less than 5 minutes about it, to be perfectly honest. And it's a great accreditation to Debbie because, you know, she also had a lot on her plate because there was a big main cast. There was always, you know, at least 5 or 6 people a day minimum with full makeup, hair, tattoo, cover, because everyone forgets, you see, because they're not seeing... they're not seeing the work. They just see the results of the work. But, you know, in this day and age, you both know, we're covering tattoos more than ever before. We're correcting things that people have done. And that's before we can even start to just put a beard on, let's say.
That's right.
You know, back in the day, it would be cleanse the skin off, shave them down, wipe it off, cleanse it off, you know, bit of alcohol, spirit gum, boom, done. Now we've got to cover the bloody tattoos before we do anything else, sort of thing.
Right.
So, you know, that's where the real artistry is, in fact. That is where the real artistry falls under. So Debbie had plenty on her plate to deal with, and I'm pretty sure that she was really relieved. You know, it's like on Cloud Atlas, they didn't tell me how to make Hallie look. But, you know, the prosthetics had been sculpted, but, the you know, the application and the color palette were all mine. They didn't say, well, you've got to give her this color this or this color that. And both of them said, thank God you're here because we've got enough on our plate. So that, I think, is a general consensus with department heads collaborating with personals, you know. I think as long as a level of respect is maintained between the two, that is all you can ever hope for. Really, because everything else, you wouldn't be a personal if you were rubbish at your job. So you're obviously there because you're decent. So let's make a movie together.
Right. Absolutely. Well, not to change the subject, but in the last few minutes that we have, you want to talk a little bit about some of the classes you've been doing.
What all around the shows? I mean, I had wanted to do color theory, and I do want to do my color theory and tonal theory. I've been preaching color theory now. Oh God, I think I started saying it about 4 years ago, and then it was really just the powder group and me talking color theory. But a few other people have jumped on that bandwagon, so that's sort of more or less catered for. But I am more focused in tonal theory. Because I literally recently just corrected someone's intense scarification using color and tonal theory and showing her how to change perspective in her face and physiognomy using tonal theory. So that's going to be something I'm definitely going to be preaching. As you know, I'm doing the color change class in London. I'll be in IMATS in Sydney later on this year, and I think we're going to be doing some period makeups and some, I don't know, all sorts of things, really. I do want to do tonal over there. The Aussies are a really, really great crowd of makeup artists to work with, actually. They've got a wonderful attitude about them, and some really amazing work is coming out of there. So I'm very excited to take my own brand of crazy and and see if they respond. I mean, the one thing, if I could make everybody go to art school before they did makeup, that would be my one wish for every single makeup artist. Do not go and get an esthetician license. That's not makeup. That's something different. Go to art school, learn to paint and learn to draw, because that is what will enable you to be a great artist, for sure. for sure. Some of my some of the best artists in the world, makeup artists, are incredible artists, like Bill Corso, you know, an incredible artist. Marc Coulier, incredible artist. You know, they can bring it with the best of them, you know, and when you see the hand-rendered drawings, it, there's no wonder that they are exquisite artists.
Right.
So that's what I want to do, is get everyone doing art.
Now, you know, Sean, when somebody asked me about becoming a makeup artist or doing makeup for film and TV, I am going to have them go back to the archives on Beauty Talk and listen to this show. There's so much meat in this conversation that I think every makeup artist can benefit from.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, whether you're doing film and TV or fashion or whatever, I think there's so much that every makeup artist can benefit from.
That's right. They need to stop dividing it and look at it as a medium. Makeup mm-hmm. is a medium, and it, then you draw from that medium wherever you want. And I tell you what, if you go and do your art theory and you do color theory and you do your tonal and you can draw and you can paint, my God, you can work in any avenue of makeup artistry. You can go and do editorial, you can do runway, you can do commercials, you can do movies, you can do anything, because it's easy once you've got the art know-how.
Right.
Absolutely.
And, you know, don't get me going, otherwise we'll be here for another hour, trust me.
Well, the three of us would do that anyway.
Yeah, well, we never stop. No, we don't stop once we start. It's always like we get what happens with us three. For those of you who are listening in, we are mates, and what happens is we end up meeting up, and then we chat for so long. I can see us all trying to get away from each other about 3 hours later, going, well, I got to go now. Yeah, but blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah. And then it starts up again, and then another half hour goes by, and we're trying to edge away. So, yeah, it's not working.
Oh, God. What's going on with London Brush Company?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's exploding. We're doing really well, thank you. I mean, it's the year of growth. I always felt that, you know, I wasn't that exhausted for no reason last year. So I thought, well, we're going to see changes in 2015. And we are, you know, suddenly from having two people, I've got 6 people who freelance for me, which is really great.
Nice.
You know, we're growing. We'll be rebranding the whole company by the end of the year. It'll be LBC by Sean Richards, and then there will be different acronyms using LBC. I'm not going to give you all of them, but put it this way: the first area that we are working on is men's, and LBC stands for London Bloke Company. So it's going to be like that. It's going to be a bit tongue-in-cheek, all affordable, you know, luxury skincare and brushes and all sorts of things. But, you know, London Brush, it started off in brushes, and I've got another collection already ready to launch before the end of the year. It's an exquisite vegan collection that we've designed, and I think you'll love. You know, but I really wanted to go into men's care, because mm-hmm. I see areas that I, you mm-hmm. know, my son doesn't find stuff that he needs easily. So we've been working a year already on London Bloke Company. And if you don't know what a bloke is, go to London and everyone will say, oi, he's a nice bloke, isn't he? So a bloke is a man. It's a guy, a geezer. Yeah. So, yeah.
But you know what all this means. You know that means now that you have the new vegan line coming out by the end of the year, you know I've got to just buy brand new brushes again.
I know. And these are sick brushes, man. I got to tell you, when we got the final samples, it was like, Oh, my God. I remember someone said that my brushes were sex on bristles. Miss Deb Davis from Australia, she calls my brushes sex on bristles. She is a makeup artist. I just want to let you all know. And she's a bit of a legend in her own right as well. And I am happy to wear that badge, sex on bristles. Yes, bring it.
Yes.
I know.
We've got to load up on the new collection when it comes. You said before the end of the year?
Oh, yeah. It'll launch before Christmas. I mean, it's so beautiful that I definitely want a Christmas launch. And, of course, innovation, you know, the new collection innovation, which is all body painting, artist brushes, character brushes, that has been selling off the hook. And we're finishing you know, phase one. Will be in final completion probably by August. We'll completely have phase one and we will start on phase two and we'll have some sets to go, you know. But we've got so many different things going on right now. I mean, the men's line is really, really important to me. Because I want to kind of, I also want to make it, to, you know, for my dad. You know, it's like I want to make, I remember what dad I used to use when I was growing up and it was, you know, always beautiful, you know, silver tip badger shaving brush and shaving soap and stuff like that. So I want to go back because, you know, the whole thing of London Brush is that we bring back classic quality. So I want to bring back the quality that my father used to use when I was growing up. And it was all that beautiful old school bespoke type stuff. So that is what the London Bloke Company will be doing. And there's going to be some tongue-in-cheek stuff too. It'll be fun, but it's going to be really good products.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait to see it all. Can't wait. So definitely keep us posted.
I will. And I absolutely will.
Tell everyone where they can buy your brushes.
Well, if you're on the East Coast, you can get them from New York at Alcone. Go and see Vinny and tell him the old Brit sent you to see him. Nigel's in LA have got the full collection. There are limited items in Friends and Namies, or you can go to londonbrushcompany.com in the US and the world. You can go to .co.uk for Europe and England. But we're in all sorts of lovely stores all over the place. In Canada, we're at Blanche McDonald. That's our main store for the time being in Vancouver. Blur Makeup Room in Toronto. All sorts of wonderful venues. So, yeah, but if you can't find a store, just come to the .com.
Yeah, that's where I am right now. Like, okay, I need this one, I need that one, I need that
Oh, my
one.
God, you wait. You're going to be in trouble, girls. You're going to be in trouble when you see the new collection. I can actually say the name. It's called 4K. So when you see the 4K collection, and it's being created because the next generation of high definition is 4K.
Yes.
So
yes.
That is what I've geared this collection to work for.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
no.
Because as I keep saying in my classes, high-definition makeup has got nothing to do with the products. It's got everything
right.
to do with the tools you use to apply it and your artistry. And that is why I thought, no, stuff this. This new collection is 4K. I've got to bring it home. I have to educate, and I have to help people understand that they can spend $100 on an Armani foundation, but if they're putting it on with a rubbish brush or a sponge, it'll either absorb all the foundation or you'll never get a smooth blend, you know, with that
absolutely.
With that brush. You know,
absolutely.
So, yeah.
That's right.
I think one of the things I'm most passionate about through London Brushes is education in the long run. So there's so much miseducation from the makeup enthusiasts. It's time now for the pros to join and to come together and educate and say to people, yes, this is how it is, actually. This is what you can do.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Sean.
You're welcome, loves.
Yes,
does that
I
mean I can go and get a cup of tea now?
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I'm going to do.
There's a funny thing, a Brit wanting a cup of tea on a Sunday afternoon. Who would have thought it?
Right. Is that black tea with milk?
Yeah, English breakfast. Well, actually, I'm going to do a blend of PG Tips and Lady Grey with a bit of milk. Absolutely. Yeah, I always blend my teas. Yeah. Totally.
Nice.
Thank you. And I miss Atlanta. I'm putting it out into the universe. Please can I get another movie in Atlanta so I can see all my mates? I loved it there. Absolutely loved Atlanta.
We would love to get back here.
Oh, I loved it, guys. I would buy a place there if I could. I absolutely loved it. I felt so comfortable there, I couldn't tell you.
Did your kids like it?
Oh, Allegra still talks. Mama, when we were at Atlanta, it was green and it was this. And I love it. Are we going back? I mean, she's serious. She's 6 and a half now. She talks about Atlanta a lot. Marcus wants to go to the university over there because he loved Atlanta so much. I mean, he said to me, Mama, I'm not being funny. I think I want to move there. I'm like, Boo, you go ahead and live there if you want to. It'll give me a place to come and visit.
Right.
No, he loved it. The kids loved it. And what's not to love? You know, it's a brilliant city. I love the cultural diversity of Atlanta. It reminds me of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, totally.
Oh, nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well,
we
hope to see you back here soon. And if not, on one of our little adventures, I'm sure.
Yeah, or if you come to London IMATS, you should bring Beauty Talk to London IMATS.
I know it's too soon, but I don't know. Maybe we need to talk to Michael Key. Maybe we'll get on one of those.
It's the 12th of July. You got time, chickadees. Come on, you can turn that around. This is the Tunnel Sisters. You can do anything. Come on. It's not like, we're not talking about two slow coaches here. We're talking about girls that get things done. Imagine you've got a second standing outside your front door saying, can you hurry up, please? You've only got 10 minutes.
Right,
you'll make that happen.
Absolutely. We make it happen. You're right about that one. You're absolutely right about that one. Let's put it into perspective. You're right.
Yeah, I've known you long enough now, you two. I know exactly how you roll. Don't even go there.
That's why I'm looking at flights as we speak.
Yeah, girl. I bet I see you. I bet I see you in London. That is hysterical. Oh, my God. I'll have you come and work the booth.
Right.
Right. Come and listen to these two. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
anyway, so so I'll expect you there then. There you go.
Okay.
Hey.
Oh, gosh.
That's the 10th and the
11th.
If it's not Monday.
The 10th is the Friday.
Right.
It's the 10th, 11th, and 12th. So pro night is the 10th, and then it's the 11th and 12th.
Gotcha.
And it's an easier ride from Atlanta. What is it, a 6-hour flight, 7-hour flight?
Something like that.
Yeah, get British Airways. Takes you off at Terminal 5. You get through Terminal 5 in 30 minutes. It's absolutely amazing. You think
we're
I'm joking?
We're on it.
Okay, I'm just going to watch this space. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Crazy women. Love it.
Oh, we love you, Sean.
Yeah, I love you too, darlings. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. Always a pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks,
and we'll be in touch soon, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right, loads of love. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye, love. Bye.
And thanks to everyone who tuned in tonight. We really do appreciate you guys. Hopefully you learned a lot about what goes into doing a period makeup. And we'll be back not next week because that's the holiday weekend. That's the 5th. But we'll be back on the 12th. And we'll have Deshawn Hatcher, and she'll be here talking about her new book, Assistant Rules. And my sister Denise can tell you where to follow us.
You can follow us. First of all, let me just make sure you all have the website for London Brush Company, and it's just that simple, londonbrushcompany.com. Be sure to check out Sean and her brushes, and if you are a makeup pro, you can receive a 30% discount as a makeup artist if you have 2+ years of experience and then some other criteria that she lists on her page. To receive new discounts. So be sure to check that out and check out her brushes. They're great brushes, pretty much some of my favorites.
You can check us out on Twitter. We're beauty_talk. On Instagram, we're beauty_talk_media. And on Facebook, we're Beauty Talk Online Radio. So please do check us out. And then if you're coming back to listen to tonight's show or some older shows, of course, for those of you who are already online listening, tell your friends. They can come to blogtalkradio.com/Beauty Talk with Illusions. blogtalkradio.com/Beauty Talk with Illusions. And you can check out all of our shows for the past 6 years.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, thanks for your support tonight and for your continued support throughout the last 6.5 years. And we will talk to you guys again back on July 12th. So everyone have a great night. Have a wonderful holiday weekend coming up. And as always, be beautiful and blessed. Good night.
Good night.